Now on top of a tremendous philosophic structure, a very, very large philosophic structure, which we have inherited as the traditional philosophic structure, we have then added up a tremendous number of new answers, which all of them, however, are directly in the tradition of the traditional search of philosophy. Our target is not to make an insane person more quiet. It would be to make an insane person sane. And that has been the target of mental healing. That has been the target of mental healing since the Stone Ages. That hasn't been the target of mental healing in the last half century. You speak to a modern psychiatrist and you voice this thought, and he looks at you with his jaw dropped. Where did you ever pick up such an outlandish thought? Oh, you think I'm joking? Well, you go around and ask one of these fellows one of these days. Go around and ask this bird, what are you trying to do with a patient? And you will stand there in vain waiting for the answer to make him sane. You're sort of flattening a process or something. You won't get that answer. See, to make him quiet, to make him more amenable, to find out what made him insane. You'll get all kinds of wild answers that will have nothing to do with the traditional goal of psychotherapy. That's why, you see, you are looked upon as very, very dangerous people. Because you're contrary to the new thought. And the new thought is, man must be a slave. You must be able to push his buttons. If you can learn anything about him whatsoever, you must use it to his disadvantage. Of course, we go on a tradition. If you learn anything about man that will help him, you help him with it. Well, that tradition is now being violated. If you learn anything about man that you can manipulate him with, you manipulate him. Well, that's not a tradition that was ever in vogue. That's brand new. Brassy new. You're going to manipulate men. You've got to change their definitions and change their goals and enslave them and do this and do that. These fellows would argue with the idea that it's a good thing for a people to be free. Well, oddly enough, that has never been an arguable point in the field of philosophy, or really, seriously, over a long period of time in enlightened times of government. They recognized very well that people would try to be free, or people want to be free, or they recognize these various points, see? Well, now they've developed a brand new philosophy that people want to be slaves. That's a switcheroo, isn't it? And they're selling everybody on the idea that people really, really down deep are just a mass, and what the person wants to do is cohese with this mass and be protected by the mass. And that is the new thought. The broader philosophic term for that is communism. And it was practiced by a fellow by the name, I think it was Lycurgus, back in Sparta. And didn't work then either. You never saw such an intellectual broken leg in your life as Sparta. If any clever fellow ever got into the borders of Sparta, a complete lack of originality, thought, thinking, and so forth was sufficiently great to actually drive him back into the hands of the executioners waiting at the border. It would drive him mad after a while, as total sameness, starry-eyed, hypnotic nowhere of the Spartan. It's quite interesting. Sparta had some other philosophies, but they were not the philosophies given to them by the gentleman I just mentioned. The Russians, being very close to Sparta, geographically and so forth, got infected with this, and it's been running over the whole country, and nobody's ever been able to invent a sufficiently strong penicillin to get Lycurgus out of the Russian bloodstream. They found out the Spartan was very good at fighting battles. And when you're only interested in fighting battles and you're not interested in your people, of course you will adopt only a Spartan philosophy. Study up your Greek philosophy a little bit, you'll find out the Spartan and the communists are practically indistinguishable. But there is one thing that distinguishes them. One thing that distinguishes them is a much, much bolder and much more degraded philosophy that has attended communism. And that's got a total switcheroo and a big curve on it, but the Spartan didn't even have that. Now, not to get involved on this situation, what has this got to do with you? Well, it has to do with you to the degree, not because I say we should assume a traditional viewpoint, that if you carefully look over Greek philosophers, if you carefully look over the basic customs and belief of man over a long period of time, I'm now talking in terms of tens of thousands of years, as far back as you can reach, you'll find out that you are echoing in Scientology his hopes and his aspirations. You're echoing the things for which he has fought, the things which he has tried to attain in life. And if you very carefully study, not just a superficial glance, if you very carefully study the utterances of the so-called man of science in the field of the mind today, you'll find a very degraded 180%, 180 degree vector to those old philosophies. Man is just an animal. If you find any buttons, push them. Man is the property of the state. Oh my God, I thought we got rid of slavery in the Dark Ages, but we didn't. Here it is again. All of these various things, all of these various things, like bad old apples that man has thought against for a long time, have now rolled forward into present time and become virtues. But whatever they are called, they are not traditional philosophy, and they are not traditional mental science. And there we can smile like Cheshire cats, because we've got it and they haven't got it. They are in violent conflict and disagreement with the basic philosophy of philosophy. They're sort of like a chemist who hates his test tubes. They're in wild disagreement. Or what are the purposes and uses of philosophy? They say to enslave man, and you say to make man free. Well, they've always been to make man free. Where does this new one come from? So what we have developed is not a new tradition of philosophy. We are in that same tradition. But what we have developed is the technology that can attain it. And we have been very successful in doing this. And that is what is new in Scientology. But the basic idea and the goals of Scientology are not new. Their expression, their organization, these things could be looked upon as quite new. But only the expression, only the organization. But the basic thought, that is not new. In other words, your success is very solidly based, and your advance is very solidly based upon the idea that you are not in the least divergent from what the mean average of all great civilizations at all times have deified as the ideal and have sought to achieve. Your ideas are not one hair off what these fellows were trying to achieve back through the countless eons. You're right there, see, you're right on that broad highway. And it's the other fellow who is calling you names that's walking in the bramble bushes. He's the fellow who's walking around in the briars. He's the fellow who has lost his road. Why is a psychologist studying psychology? Ah, well, if he could answer that question, if you could get a persuaded answer out of him. If he's a very young student, he might answer you glibly, right from the tradition and custom of the race, from the people in the street. But if he's been trained at any period of time, he will no longer give you the first answer, which might be, well, to help people. He'd give you that. But after he's been at it for a while, your seasoned practitioner, your well-trained person who is answering now with the answers of indoctrination will never give you that answer. He just won't give you that answer, that's all, because it wouldn't occur to him. It's not there. Now, what are these fellows headed for? They're headed for oblivion. I base that very solidly because every time any large group or organization in this universe has adopted policies which are anti-survival for the individual of the group as well as the group itself, that group has gone to dust. It has not survived because its customs are no good. Let's call the doctor, the psychiatrist, the psychologist, call them collectively a civilization. Just to compare them in this particular way. And we find out that they have anti-survival policies and customs. They're very anti-survival. The maddest news story I think I ever read in my life is how this drug was killing off everybody in the institution, and those it didn't kill off, it turned purple, and they were all having spasms, but the doctor was saying, but we've got to have it. It's the only thing that calms them down, but we've got to have this drug, and it's very catastrophic that it's killing them all off because we've got to have it and got to administer. Whoa! They should have had him in a cage. Even in an unenlightened period of philosophy such as Elizabethan times, they probably would have paraded such a bloke up and down the Haymarket in a cage. These pills are killing everybody, but we've got to give them to them, and it's too bad they're killing everybody because we've got to have these trans... Oh, you probably don't believe me. Very often you think I'm extreme and that I don't tell you the truth about such people. And all too often you go and collide with it on your own and you find out there it sits. Well, now how does this compare with the tradition of the witch doctor or even the Egyptian doctor or the old Greek physician or the Asclepians? Or how would you reconcile that? Well, it can't be reconciled. We've got to treat the patient. Well, why are we treating this patient? Obviously, the answer is missing. If we've got to keep treating the patient this way, although it kills him, then why we are treating the patient must then be out of agreement with what people normally assume you're treating patients for. Right? The world at large assumes that we're treating patients for a certain reason. Well, this guy couldn't possibly have any of that reason for why he's treating patients. So therefore his tradition is out, and he is out of tradition. And I would say that their days are not numbered because I am saying their days are numbered, but I'm just analyzing a general situation. And I wouldn't buy any bonds in that company. I don't think it has a sound management. I think its philosophy of doing business is wrong. People who want to kill people will hire them. But I don't think this has much future. I think we have a group there which have anti-survival tendencies and customs and policies. And they're not only anti-survival to those with whom they do business, but they are anti-survival to themselves. And so their days are numbered, just like the days of any civilization or activity or organization which has anti-survival policies. Their days are numbered. So you will live yourself to see all that fade away as far as they're concerned. You'll see another dawn. oddly enough, whether you do anything about it or not. You don't have to do anything about it at all. They would fade away. You see? They don't have to be fought. They're going to blow themselves up. Inevitable. The germ of their own destruction is carried daily to their offices, daily through their conferences, daily through their chain of patients, and daily homeward, and daily to bed. So there isn't any reason to get hot about that, because they aren't even a threat to you. You're on a much sounder tradition. You're taking the tradition of man has the desire to be free, and when you heal people, why, you make them better. And when things are, when somebody is sad, you make him more cheerful again. And I mean, these are the accepted thing. You see, that's it. That's custom. What do you do with a sick man? What do you do with a despondent person? What do you do with these people? Will you right away, immediately, you agree? Why? Make him well, cheer him up. Well, that's an agreement with the populace as a whole. You don't get a complicated answer like, well, what you do is put him in the hospital for a few days so you can charge his relatives and send them a bill. You don't get institutionalizing for the good of the society. You don't get as Rockefeller, who didn't go rocketing to president. You don't form up concentration camps for young people who might go wrong. You say, oh, he had that idea. No. They have those camps in New York. Nobody ever's heard about them. They're concentration camps for youths who might go wrong. They haven't done anything. They haven't been charged with anything. But they come from a family and environmental area which some psychologist has worked out produces a majority of criminals. And they do this by statistics. So if some fellow's father has brown eyes and the wife has green eyes, and the RH factor of the two of them is Witterpoof's bath, and the family income does not exceed $5,000 a month, why, the young man will become a criminal, so he must be put in a concentration camp. No, you think I'm joking. Look, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty witty. I can make up all kinds of jokes. But you know, I'm not good enough to make up the jokes those guys pull all the time. So you don't think like that. So you're not able to understand what they're all about. And they don't think like the populace at large. It isn't that they don't think like a Scientologist. It's they don't think like the public at large. They're trying to change the customs, you see. So therefore, they aren't understood either. And they don't understand the public at large. They haven't any common ground with them at all. Now, these are all things that it's interesting for you to know, but actually they're quite important, because you should recognize where we have made the breakthrough and where we have made progress. We have made progress in how to accomplish goals which man has had as long as he has been man. And what he has considered good and what he has considered desirable in the field of philosophy, we have accomplished technically. And that is the breakthrough which we have made. We aren't even too far out right now on the old witch doctor. Because we've got the technology of communication, because we've got the technology of putting together a session, because we've got an auditor's code, because, you see, it's all technical materials, because we've got more technical materials, we can now take the old witch doctor's red rocks or whatever he was using. Oh, they're wild. You should read some of their treatments sometime. They, girls having a hard time delivering a baby and so forth. The witch doctor comes in with a big swollen abdomen, goes through writhings and howls and screams and produces a great red stone out from underneath his smock and puts it down and says there and feels much better. And right away the girl has her baby without any difficulty. He did it without communication, but he did do it with duplication. They've got all kinds of symbolical magic. They did all kinds of things like this. On the Amur River, the witch doctor of the shaman along the Amur River still to this day uses these techniques. They have been used far longer by man than any other healing techniques. And you find them today suddenly rearing their heads again in clay table work. Only why are we more effective? Well, it's a traditional approach. So therefore, it seems traditional to the person who's doing it. Buried back along the line, he's had plenty of witch doctors leaping and howling and producing stones from underneath the robe, don't you see, and taking out a broken stick and then binding it all up and then showing suddenly, magically, as he does the unbindings, the whole stick is whole again. Anybody you're operating on has had plenty of this kind of treatment far earlier on the track than sawbones and setting bones and so forth. It's a higher level of healing because it's a level by symbology. It's symbolical healing. And it's by mass symbols and the assignment of it. Well, we can explain why it works. And because we can run a session, and he couldn't, we can make it work far more often than he could make it work. Don't you see? Well, what's our improvement? Our improvement is not on the idea that a witch doctor called upon to heal a leg should have the idea that he should heal the leg. You see? We've not improved on that idea, and that's a fairly marvelous idea. That a witch doctor should do his job, and that the better witch doctor in the tribe got more patients than the worser ones. These are all standard line ideas, see. That the proper thing for a witch doctor to do was to work for or with the patient and so forth. This was pretty good. Of course, when I speak to somebody who speaks of the juju-type witch doctor of Africa, I don't make much communication because those boys have long gone the same route that the tribes went down there that say it's good to lie and steal, see. Now, that's a sort of a reverse black magic idea, and they're pretty Johnny-come-lately, and they're pretty rare. They've gone into a witch doctoring, which is squirrel witch doctoring, like psychology. So, but your tradition is there. There's the guy. Guy's got a broken leg. What do you do? Well, a witch doctor comes in. What's the witch doctor's idea? Heal the guy's broken leg. Elementary. You've not varied that with the other healing professions which are in existence today have. So they're in violation of man's customs as they reach past the aeons. And I'd say their chances of survival were lousy. As long as they had that idea, and they didn't abandon that idea until very recently, very short time ago, they started changing everybody's customs on it. Not all parts of the world have these customs or ideas, but they are general, and they do go back much longer than other forms and sets. So what's your approach? You just have got a better technology. See, your technology is better. Wise man sits on a mountaintop, and he utters wise things, and somebody comes up to him and asks him for advice because they're having a bad time in life. And he sits up there on his mountaintop, and he says, well, now, son, go ye forth. And the first virgin you see, walk around her three times and do not spit once. And you will have good luck for 3 days and three nights. Well, now, what tradition is going on there, regardless of the technology this fellow, wise man on the mountaintop, is using? What tradition? The guy came to him for advice, so he helped him. That's the tradition. The tradition includes that there should be wise men. The tradition includes that if there are wise men, you go to them for advice. You see? These are traditional. Sounds sort of elementary, doesn't it? It sounds so elementary that you'd say, well, of course, everybody knows that. Well, everybody knew that, but it is now, to a large degree, being violated by the usurping Johnny-come-lately technology. See? Lord knows what they'd do. And faced with the idea that there might be a wise man someplace, they go mad. They say, shoot him, kill him. That's the right thing to do to somebody who was being a wise man. If somebody wants to go to somebody for advice, why, the thing to do is tell them, they're all quacks and frauds. Why, that doesn't seem traditional. The traditional, if there's somebody who can give you advice, why, you go to them for advice. You don't make a commotion about it and then not give them any advice yourself. Or give them some advice that'll get you a bigger fee, or something like this. This is not in the tradition, don't you see? And there's never been any tradition that there is orthodox advice on the subject in certain fields, and there's unorthodox advice on the subject. If there was advice, there was advice. You see what I mean? We have today orthodox science. What the hell are we talking about? The Dark Ages and religion? Orthodox science? You mean an experimental research field has an orthodox science? You mean there are certain immutable, unchangeable, never to be varied principles in this field? Oh, bull. How could there be an orthodox science? Why, in order to have an orthodox science, which was totally orthodox, and against which all sciences were evaluated legally as to whether or not they were orthodox or not, you would have had to produce some kind of an effect with this orthodox science. You know, you'd have to actually have gotten the whole universe wound up or done something like this, don't you see? But without any proof at all right now, we find the fools over there in Washington and the Food and Drug Administration, we find these nuts talking all the time about not agreeing with orthodox science. Craziest thing anybody ever heard of. They say a principle will work or won't work if it agrees or disagrees with orthodox science. Well, this would be all right if they laid out a textbook and said, orthodox science is written by a fellow named Black. And his textbook is available from the Library of Congress. See? And that's what we consider orthodox science. But no, they never define orthodox science. So what's the trick here is that anything they want to do something to, they merely say it's unorthodox because there is no orthodoxy. Remember the gag I used to talk to you about? This fellow says, you are doing wrong, but you can't find out what's right. You know, you can always be hung with the idea that you're doing wrong. Well, they have a hidden idea of what's right. Well, the art critic is always at this. Here is a field that isn't wrapped up at all, the arts. Wow, I mean, the arts. Well, what's art? Well, wow, what's art? I mean, there you've asked the wildest question that you could ever project out into the firmament. What's art? You can't answer it. You can make efforts to answer it. But supposing we made it law. This is art and that isn't art. And then gave a prison penalty for somebody for not doing art. And then had no standard art of any kind for him to do like. I'd say people would get confused about that time, and they've done just exactly that today in science. They haven't got a standard science. They went and knocked out laws of conservation of energy in the field of elementary physics. They must have, because they all say they have. Well, if those basic principles of finite physics have been knocked out, how could they even have an orthodox science if they don't have a basic physics? Well, and what is basic physics? Well, I don't know. I don't think anybody else does today. They've proven several of its principles to be false, but there's nothing in its place. So right away, they say, the art critic comes along, and you've just painted a painting. And the art critic says, well, actually, it's quite poor. Compared to what? You see, it's a totally invalid criticism. He could say, well, that line isn't straight. Well, great. The line isn't straight. That's all right. But he would have a hard time trying to really lay it down and say this is this and that is that, don't you think? But he'd have to tell you what's art. He'd have to tell you what you should do like. And they usually get around it, say that isn't like Rubens. You're supposed to be doing a Rubenesque painting and it isn't like Rubens. Well, that's a perfectly valid statement. If you're supposed to be doing Rubenesque work and you don't paint like Rubens, obviously. But supposing we make this remark to somebody without any comparison for a Rubens. We don't have any Rubens, you see. You say, you're not like Boojum. And you say, what the hell is Boojum? Well, you don't know. Well, it looks to me like somebody's invented a way to punish those they wish to punish when they wish to punish them without any reason for punishment. It looks to me like a control mechanism about 9 miles wide that is not based on any fact. And that is in violation of the basic tradition of law, science, adjudication, everything else. Find an excuse to punish people with which they can't, and they can't comply, so therefore you can punish anybody you want to punish anytime you want to punish them, because there's no way they can say they have complied, because what they're complying with doesn't exist. Do you see? And when I've given you that setup, I have, of course, given you the standard setup in any society which has no customs. There is no right conduct. So therefore, everybody can be berated because he is not conducting himself rightly. So it becomes a society of total criticism. It is no longer a society in which anyone can comply, because there's nothing you can comply with. If there is no right conduct, then how in the name of God can you do any right conduct? If there's no bridge to walk across, how can you walk across a bridge? Supposing there's no bridge to walk across, and everybody who doesn't walk across the bridge is shot. You'd say, that's unreasonable. No, it's not unreasonable. It's insane. And that's how far society can go on the subject of customs. It can go all the way out the bottom. In other words, they pretend there is a custom there when there isn't any. They pretend that there is a reason when there is none. They pretend that there is a 1, 2, 3, 4 procedure and then will never tell you what it is. And yet punish you because you don't comply with it. And that is a society which is gone. It may be still around. Its spires may be brilliant against the afternoon sky, but the sun is setting, and it is setting at a high velocity. It's interesting that the brassiness of the material wealth of a society is no test of its endurance. How long the society is to endure demonstrates that they very often have ceased to be vital societies at the time they were building their biggest statues. That was true of the age of Pericles. Greece had already gone by the boards when she had her greatest period of art. Quite interesting, isn't it? She'd lost her grip. She was no more. And yet, most of the things we've inherited have come from that period right after she was a gone nation. That's all very germane to the point. So as long as you stay with the tradition of when you say something, you're supposed to be sensible. When somebody's sick, you help them. When they are despondent, you try to cheer them up. If you're a practitioner, you try to help people. If you have technology, you use it for the survival of the group. If you have knowledge and so forth, you should use it to assist others. These are the traditions which have built the great civilizations of this planet, and the great civilizations of this universe are all operating on those traditions. Those are customs. They are proven to be survival characteristics. Doesn't mean that there can't be other ideas, that there can't be other customs, but it does mean that those are customs. And then you follow this thought through a little bit further, and you'll see then that part of a custom has to do with its communication. Because a custom permits communication, then the communication of customs is itself quite a technology. You follow? So it is where the custom has broken down in its communication that it is abandoned. The custom is not communicated anymore, and even though it is still useful, it is therefore not followed. Now, the breakdown of the custom itself will cause a fallout of communication. You see, you no longer get Joe saying, "How are you, Bill?" And it's customary, of course, for Bill to say, "Oh, I'm okay. How are you, Joe?" See, that's very customary. So 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. See? That's customary. We no longer teach somebody who is moving up into this civilization that when people ask him how he is, why he should tell them and ask them how they are. See, we no longer communicate the mechanism of communication. See, we forget to communicate this mechanism of communication. We don't teach people this anymore. We don't make these customs available anymore. They aren't there. They're gone. Then we get a breakdown on the part of the civilization. See, its customs are no longer taught to it. Somebody else is trying to teach them different customs or holding the survival value of these customs in question or invalidating customs, or the nation or civilization is under a raid or something from some dissident source, some other organization or group is trying to cave it in. And so it's trying to knock these things around or fix it so they won't be communicated anymore. Or new developments of one kind or another come along and sweep aside old customs for some reason or other. But that's the lesser reason, oddly enough, although it's announced by the sociologists as the prime reason it isn't. It's really that the custom is no longer communicated. And a civilization breaks down on this basis, that the means of communication are not any longer taught in that society. So it's customs, it's policies, this sort of thing. They're not taught. So therefore, the people inside that society can't work together. You get very little, to use the old Chinese word, you get very little gung-ho. There's no cooperation, see. Well, where's the no cooperation? Well, the people don't know the customs on which they're operating. Net result of that is decay, decline, and banishment of the group. So, therefore, we come to the second part of what I told you about at the beginning of the lecture, which is teaching people Scientology. How could you be remiss? Well, teach them with words and terms which they do not understand. Louse up the communication so it doesn't communicate, in other words. Use terms which are not defined. Use various things which are undiscoverable. Do a poor job of teaching them customs, in other words. And they'll go to pieces. Everything will go to pieces on that effort. In fact, your effort may be completely unsuccessful, but it may be just partially successful. And they haven't learned their lessons well at all, and they blow up in your face. And this is why any practitioner setting himself up newly in a district, if he got a bad reputation or so forth, this is the real reason why he would get a bad reputation. It isn't based on fact at all. I can demonstrate to you very definitely that it has nothing to do really with behavior. Behavior, conduct, and practice have almost nothing to do with it. It's rather frightening. Because customarily, we believe that if we conduct a good and effective practice and do a good job and so forth, why other things will, of course, immediately follow in sequence. And that doesn't happen to be it. If you are successful, and if you mean to stay there a long time, these give you a long-term survival. Being effective in how you handle a case is not primary in having a good reputation or repute in your immediate area. That's interesting, isn't it? There's something came ahead of that. It's being comprehensible. When you teach somebody something, when you do something for somebody, why, put it such a way and handle it in such a way and handle your little courses and teachings in such a way as they are comprehensible. Because if you're truly comprehensible, they'll forgive you almost anything. Your primary course of human existence, then, is guided by whether or not they can comprehend. This must be the basic and fundamental on which it is built. So they understand you. Why, this opens the door for your effectiveness to become apparent. But if they don't understand you, the door will close on all of your effectiveness. Do you see that? So by all means, for heaven's sakes, be effective, because you can be comprehensible for quite a period of time. But in the final analysis, you've also got to deliver. You see, you also got to deliver. But delivery is not all, isn't of the same magnitude of comprehensibility. Doing the job is not of the same magnitude at all. Just a hole can exist in a society into which a certain class of activity will occur. I mean, so they've got to have some doctors. They got to have some doctors, you see, and the society's got to have some doctors. And just the fact that there's this terrific need will cause somebody to supply that demand. And you get the modern medico. He isn't gonna do much for anybody, you understand? He's gonna make motions and so forth, but it's the fact there's this terrific need for healing in the society which then brings about the fact that somebody steps into the breach. It's the need that creates the demand. So if that exists, and he still goes on and does this, and he's ineffective at it, as long as there's the need, why, there'll be something filling that hole, see? So competence is not at the top rank there. So we get at something on the order of comprehensibility, necessity, that is to say, the demand. There's got to be a demand. You got to be comprehensible. And then if you want to keep at it any length of time at all and not have somebody shoot you down like we're going to shoot them down, just by existing, we will do that. Not that we ever have to come in overt on it. Now you've got to be effective. Now you've got to be very effective. Of course, if you put effectiveness into these other two things, you are... The demand exists. You're terrifically comprehensible as to exactly what you're doing, and you don't let anybody get by with not comprehending you, and so forth. And then you do your job well and effectively. Well, hell, General Sherman tank is a grasshopper compared to the way you would forge forward. Do you see? But they're in something of that order of importance. You can't get along forever without being effective, but you can get along a certain distance even without being effective. Now, if you did those things and so forth, why, the woof and the warp of future civilizations actually would depend upon you. It's that important. Because these things can exist, the philosophic tradition must be kept alive, these things must go forward, and you'll find out that you would succeed to the degree that you followed along this line, and the degree that you understood what you were doing, and people understood what you were doing and understood you, and then the demand would be there, and then you, of course, are competent in operating. Why? How could you miss? Thank you.